Blog Talk Radio.
That music can only mean one thing. It is time once again for the worst 90 minutes in sports. That's right. It's the Two Guys Soccer Show. As always, we are brought to you by the fine folks at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's venue, premier venue for live sports and entertainment. And we have an additional sponsor this week, alcohol. Because it is what makes this show that much more interesting. I am one guy, as always. I am Mike. He is the other guy. How are you doing this evening, Stead?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. You know, I had a really busy weekend, so I wasn't able to watch too much football. But due to the glory of the NBC Sports app, as well as YouTube, I was able to relatively keep up. I was at a conference. I was out of town. And I realized why I don't like taking the red eye. Because what can happen is your flight can get delayed for 7 hours and you are stuck sleeping on the floor of a cold airport, ironically, in Phoenix, of all places, which is where I was about 36 hours ago. So, needless to say, sitting on here talking about the beautiful game with you is a much, much improvement over my life situations in the past 24 hours. So, glad to be on.
And we are glad to have you, considering your travel woes over the course of the past couple of days. I hope Seattle was good to you?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty good town. Pretty good town.
Did you see flying fish?
I did. Got
was
up early.
It everything that I hoped that it would be?
Yes, it was. It was exciting. People were cheering. And then I went to a restaurant. The name leaves me. It was a little stand-up spot right around the corner. Had a great piece of cod. I think it was Alaskan cod over a slightly a bed of rice al dente with some spinach. Was it overpriced? Absolutely. Would I do it again? In a heartbeat.
Well, I am glad to hear that you enjoyed the beautiful city of Seattle. Did you see Russell Wilson while you were out there?
I did not, but I saw probably, let's see, 7 jerseys in total during my time out there. So saw plenty of Russell Wilson jerseys. His likeness was not, it wasn't plastered over the place like one would expect because it's still the Pacific Northwest. But to say that for a city with the reputation of Seattle, I still saw lots of grunge. I heard lots of, music that all sound like Pearl Jam. But I also saw my fair share of sports memorabilia. But shockingly, do you know what I saw more in the stores than Seahawks gear? And that was Saunders gear. Celebrating the championship for the Seattle Sounders. I saw lots of that floating around, which was pretty cool.
And you got to love the electric green Sounders jerseys. But given what the Seattle Seahawks color scheme, I'm thinking electric green is like the color of the city.
Yeah. Yeah, probably.
But there's nothing wrong with that. It brightens up what can occasionally be a gloomy atmosphere.
Oh, you are right. I didn't see sun until we were taking off in the plane in Phoenix on Sunday morning. Didn't see sun, and I got there on Wednesday. So, yeah, no sun.
I'm reminded of a time as I was asking you about Raymond Gaddis. We went to a Philadelphia Union game and came back with my cousin and her husband, and we were sitting out at a sidewalk, you know, one of those sidewalk restaurants, bars in Philadelphia. And one of the people who was with us had a Raymond Gattis jersey on, who former right back for the Philadelphia Union. Guess who comes strolling by as we're sitting there?
Who?
Raymond Gattis.
Yeah. Oh, I did have a celebrity sighting on my travels back.
Who?
I saw the great Joe Theismann.
Ooh, where was Joe coming from?
Well, Joe was coming in. Joe was in Phoenix, and I felt bad for him when I actually realized that Joe was obviously on the same plane that we were supposed to be on, returning from the Phoenix area, which was supposed to leave around 12:30 a.m. on Sunday. And as I am going to the plane, I see that he is in a – he's like in a bagel shop, and he's just enjoying a light breakfast. And once I recognized him, I looked him dead in the face, and I just saw in his face, he was like, I've been sitting in this airport for who knows how long, and I would appreciate it if you'd let me slide on this one. So I gave him a nod, he gave me a nod back, and I left him alone. But you know what? Seemed like a nice guy. A couple people said hi to him. He just waved back. But luckily there was a lot of young people, a lot of students and young teachers. So I imagine that unless you were probably 40 or over, you probably didn't recognize that that was Joe Theismann.
I'd have asked him if you'd seen Lawrence Taylor recently.
Yeah. That, you know, I thought the same thing crossed my mind. It would have been great if I had a Lawrence Taylor jersey that I just happened to be wearing that day.
Hey, Joe, how's your leg? Yeah. Seen Lawrence Taylor recently?
You still got kind of a lip there. What year was that? 88, 87, 85?
Don't let, no, I think that was even before then.
He won the Super Bowl in 83.
He won the Super Bowl in 83, but
yeah,
the,
it was 84, 85.
Yeah, it was probably closer to that time frame. I think it might have been 85. You know who would know? Producer Paul.
Yeah.
But, and I do want to thank Producer Paul. Producer Paul should be down watching the Eagles game, but instead he is producing our show. So
that
big
is
shout
amazing.
Out to Producer
big
Paul.
Shout out to Producer Paul.
Thank you very much, sir.
I'm sure if the two teams didn't have a combined total wins of 7, that might be a little different. But considering that this game could only be made, it's kind of funny that if they were playing the Redskins, the combined total of wins would be 8. So let's just say that I don't think we're missing a barn burner tonight, at least up to this point. That's my shot at the NFC East.
Yes. All right. So before we really get into things, in local news, I would like to give a big congratulations to Lindsay Brick, a defender from Quince Orchard High School. She was named All-American this past week. The first All-American in Quince Orchard High School history. She will be attending Syracuse in the fall. So congratulations to Lindsay, and congratulations to her whole family. I'm good friends with her father, so I wanted to make sure I gave her a shout-out, a well-deserved
congratulations.
Shout-out.
That's awesome.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, this is a relative hotbed for women's soccer. There's a lot of strong players that are coming out of this area, so definitely something to keep an eye on.
Yes, and we will continue to follow her as she goes to Syracuse, which just so happens to be her father's alma mater as well. Keeping it in the family. So, it is Army-Navy week, amongst other things, non-soccer related. And I was reading, and I don't know how I missed this, that Navy recently named a destroyer after Army coach Jeff Monken. It was part of a bet on last year's Army-Navy game. So, because Army won 17-10, they named a destroyer the USS Jeff Monken, which I think is just the greatest thing. But to ask the question of the day, Mr. Stead.
Yes, sir.
If you could rename something based on the outcome of a rivalry game, what would it be?
Ooh. Let's see. Yeah, you know what? A funny one crossed my mind. I think it would be really funny that when Arsenal is able to win the Premier League title in Spurs Old Stadium, I think they should have named it after Sol Campbell, who said he'd never play for Arsenal and ended up playing for Arsenal. And I believe he was on that winning squad. Could be mistaken, but that just crossed my mind. But I think I'm going to go with this. I went to an international game for this one and said what would be really funny is if they decide to name the Estadio Mineiro in Belo Horizonte in Brazil after the German national team when they lost 7-1. And the man of that match was Tony Kroos. So I say rename Estadio Mineiro in Belo Horizonte the Tony Kroos Stadium in Belo Horizonte. I think that would be I actually think the Brazilian fans would probably find it pretty funny, considering that another goal for Germany has become a sentence to describe something that continues to happen even to the detriment of the person who is saying it. And I found that quite humorous. So that's the one I'm going to go with. So Tony Kroos Stadium is now in Belo Horizonte in Brazil.
So a couple of suggestions that came in from the text line. British Will, the Ibrox Stadium should be renamed the Vatican should Celtic beat Rangers. Imei, how about the Etihad being called Casalero del Diablo? And they have to change their mascot to a bottle of wine when they lose to Manchester United.
Mm.
My two personal suggestions were when United beats Liverpool in the Champions League final, they're going to rename the Kop to George Best Stand.
Ah, I like that one.
I had also thought of you and renaming White Hart Lane after Arsene Wenger. And changing the name of White Hart Lane in Tottenham, not the stadium, but the actual street, to Arsene Wenger Way.
Yeah, considering that he owned them quite numerously in that stadium. You know what you could also go with, though?
Mm.
You could rename the Bernabeu to Ronaldinho Stadium after his performances in that venue. Anytime you receive a standing ovation from the opposing crowd, clearly, you own that stadium.
And another one that I came up with, if and when Millwall plays West Ham again,
if Millwall loses,
they should rename their whole entire team the Hammers United.
Yeah, but how great would it be if they just changed London Stadium to another name for a den, you know? That would be awesome.
Instead of the den, they could call it like the office.
Yeah. That would be great. That would be great. Love to see
Millwall
do that.
Millwall has to rename their stadium the bowling ground, because there should be a bowling ground someplace in London.
Yeah, absolutely. That's very true.
And they have to rename the street outside of their stadium Green Street.
After?
Green Street Hooligans.
Oh, yeah. That's a great film.
And adopt Fredo as their mascot.
As their mascot, yeah. Oh, I like that. I like that. That's pretty good.
Okay. In fact, I think there should be if they lose, if West Ham beats Millwall, all Millwall fans should be required to show up in Elijah Wood masks for the rest of the season.
That would be great. But they all have to shrink to about 5'5", too, to make it fit better, you know. Or they could just show up as Frodo Baggins. That would be even better.
Yeah. So, this was an interesting week in this week, and I have an entire list of things that I need to talk about, and I don't even know where to stand. So I'm just going to randomly pick something out and start with the announcement that came out today that Russia had been banned from the 2022 World Cup, amongst other things, by the World Anti-Doping Association for repeated violations of doping rules. So as it stands, they will not be allowed to compete as Russia. But there is a backdoor, conceivably, that the Russian national team could play as a neutral team and still go qualifying and qualify for the upcoming 2022 World Cup. Mind you, this does not apply to the European Cup this summer because, according to WADA, UEFA is not a quote-unquote major event organization.
I don't know if I that was. I would almost say UEFA rivals FIFA as far as how far as an organization. So, I also think. But I'm sorry. Did Russia qualify for the 24 for the Euro?
Yes, they did.
I believe they did.
And they will be hosting a game, which, because it is previously contracted, they will be allowed to host.
Yeah, I think that's just WADA giving Russia an out, considering that this tournament is not that far away. And even though I don't think it's as hard as they want you to think it is to change venues for a particular match, all the other logistics that have gone into the planning and ticket sales and the fact that they're hosting a game, chances are likely that they went, yeah, we'll give them a bit of a pass here, but maybe, and we'll just kind of frame it under this particular excuse, which is total cop out if you ask me. But I would suspect that, due to the timing of it all and the fact that Russia has already gone through qualifying, that would be a bit of a bit of a challenge to either enforce that. Because, of course, Russia could just appeal and appeal and appeal and appeal. And I think that would be a real – that would be sad for the Russian players.
I also question how right now UEFA would figure out who would get that slot.
Yeah, exactly. Would you just
and
go with the first playoff team that was eliminated? Like, you know, kind of like that in the – what is it, first four in, first four out of the NCAA tournament? Or would they just say, like, well, you know, let's look at your FIFA ranking or something like that, or your ELO ranking, and say, you're the next highest-ranked team, you made it this far in qualifications, sure, you're in. Yeah, that would be pretty difficult.
Or the next best team in the group, and then just, but then you would be asking a team that you'd have to rejig the playoffs and redraw everything. So I can understand them giving the out and saying, all right, you guys can play in this one. And to be honest, soccer players and all of those guys play professionally are probably tested a little bit differently than, say, Olympic athletes. So
I would also say that Russian soccer, while very competitive, is not on the level internationally for a lot of the sports that Russia competes in at an Olympic level. So I think this might be different if Russia was having results of, say, Portugal or France recently. I could see that possibly changing the narrative a bit, because if they're like, if we're really good. But, you know, Russia getting to the second round and winning a game in the World Cup was a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal. So I kind of feel like Russia and the United States could have a rivalry in world football.
I wouldn't mind saying that. And by the way, hello to our newest member. How are you doing? I can hear her in the background.
Yes, she's doing all right. She just had a nice bottle, but she did watch. She watched some games today, so I'm sure she has some commenting to do. She had on her Arsenal onesie, so she was pretty jazzed up earlier today. So I'll let you know what she says about it if we get to the Premier League later on. But she's doing
well.
All right.
Well, why wait? What did not Baby Yoda think of Arsenal snapping their longest non-winning streak
mm-hmm.
in 42 years.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the most important 9 minutes that this team has played in a number of years. In a number of years. You could conceivably say that if they lost today, because they were down 1-0, that would have really been a really difficult situation. That would have had them in, I believe, 11th. But because we're getting deeper into the season and we're having more stretch occur in the middle of the table, and you're getting a bit of a separation between not just the top four, but also maybe even the top five, maybe even the top six, Arsenal getting this win still keeps them 2 points off of fifth place, whereas they lost, that would have put them 5 points. And as you see, points are hard to come by right now in the Premier League. And they're beyond a third of the way through the season, and you're about to hit the toughest stretch of games that you basically are going to have, which is that winter break where you're playing lots and lots and lots of ball in back-to-back days, as well as trying to wrap up wrapping up the Europa League, as well as the FA Cup games are going to start to hit the Premier League relatively soon. So this was very, very important. And one thing one of the commentators said that I thought was really, really was striking was Arsenal have talented players. They have talented players. So clearly there's something wrong with the coaching or at least the motivation of the team. Up until about the 60th minute, it looked like they were just having a kickabout on a Sunday afternoon. You saw very little sense of urgency amongst the team. You really didn't see a lot of runs being made. It definitely wasn't your typical Arsenal-West Ham game, where even though Arsenal has been dominant, that's usually a game where those guys throw haymakers, trying to attack, 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 attack. Now, West Ham is, of course, going through their typical mid-season. I mean, that has to be the most inconsistent. That's the most consistently inconsistent team that, as far as, like, hopefully staying out of relegation. So, but getting goals, not necessarily getting goals from Aubameyang, because he's been the only person who seems to score with that squad when they're not at home, but getting a goal from Martinelli and getting a goal from Pepe were huge. Huge, huge, huge. Martinelli was the only player who seemed like he was playing with any real heart out there for quite a few stretches of the match. And Pepe is showing that there's a reason why they spent the money they needed to spend on him. Now, sadly, is that I don't think people could really see the quality he had, because he has a lot of quality in the field. He just wasn't scoring any goals. Scored a beautiful in-swinger with his left today and had a lot of fire in his, had a lot of fire after he scored. He was very, very happy about that. So I think that – I'm not saying that that has changed or righted the ship for Arsenal. Ljungberg made some tough decisions, keeping David Luiz on the bench, not putting Lacazette into the game. Hopefully just trying to send a message about things going on in training or trying to just show that he is now the boss temporarily. But that was a big deal. I think if they lost that game, any chances of having a respectable finish this year would have been gone, because the confidence in the team looked really, really poor. Especially at the beginning of the second half when they were down 1-0. They looked like they were just trying to get back on the bus and go back to North London. So that was huge. And the two things can happen. That could, of course, recharge the battery, or it could just be further prolonging the inevitable of a bad season for Arsenal. But these next few stretches of games, they have to play Manchester City this weekend. So I think that is going to see – if they can get a draw in that game, then they'll be – then I think that'll be a that could basically be equivalent of a win with the way they've been playing recently. So they need a coach. I'm not sure Ljungberg is the long-term answer. I was actually thinking – I actually liked the idea of bringing in Mikel Arteta, considering that he was a very respected leader in the Premier League for a number of years with Everton and with Arsenal. But my man Thomas – one of my Arsenal buddies said that he would like Simeone. And I first kind of looked at him like, what? What are you talking about? And then I thought about it for a minute and said, that is not a bad idea. If they could possibly pull a coup and bring him in, I would actually be supportive of that. So, but that's where I stand right now. I'm pretty relatively pleased with today. I think it was a good showing. They had a good, strong 9 minutes where they really showed their quality. And they took advantage of a club that was really on a that's really on a downswing right now. And, yeah, that's kind of where I'm sitting right now. So I'm going to hold my breath for a little while longer. And hopefully me and Coach can come up for air in a few weeks after this winter holiday is over.
All right, so I was seriously scribbling down notes as you were talking, so let's start. When you said Diego Simeone, at first I was like, for manager of Arsenal, at first I wanted to be like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. But then I thought about it. To a certain extent, his job at Atletico Madrid is done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not 100% sure that he can prove anything more there than he has already demonstrated.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, he has brought them into the new stadium and been successful. They've opened it. It's built. They paid the bills. If he was going to leave, now might be the time to do it.
Mm-hmm.
The problem would be that you will have to wait until next year.
Mm-hmm.
Get him,
mm-hmm.
which means going through the remainder of the season with Freddie Ljungberg as
mm-hmm.
coach.
Mm-hmm.
If you are comfortable doing that, then perhaps Diego Simeone is your man.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do feel like there is a better chance of winning trophies, silverware, competing, winning Champions Leagues, winning leagues at Arsenal than there is in La Liga.
Mm-hmm.
And he's already done it in La Liga. He's taken Atletico Madrid to 2 Champions League finals. He's won a league. He has done what nobody thought was possible and broken up the duopoly
mm-hmm.
of Real Madrid and Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
If he was going to jump, this might be the time that he would do it.
Yeah.
I don't think it's likely, but I could see more now it happening than I have in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting one. It took me a second to really process and say, okay, yeah, that is not as far-fetched as I think. And I think he would be an awesome manager. But we normally dismiss him because at this point we're like, he's not leaving Atletico Madrid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I remember when Arsenal bought Mikel Arteta in the first place from Everton.
Mm-hmm.
And it came amidst a panic buying spree. But
mm-hmm.
I thought it turned out to be a very inspired signing
mm-hmm.
because I
mm-hmm.
really did rate Mikel Arteta. He was a guy who I don't think got as much of a chance as he deserved in the Spanish national team.
Agreed. Agreed.
Considering how quality a player he was for both Everton and Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
At best, he was the quintessential number 10. Now, granted,
mm-hmm.
they had some guys ahead of him who fit the bill better at Spain, but this was a great player.
Mm-hmm.
And it just so happened that he wasn't Xavi or Iniesta.
Right.
And he wasn't Sergio Busquets.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't that, he never got as much of a chance to play for Spain as he probably deserved. But that
mm-hmm.
was a great coach. And he's gone around and he's learned from Pep Guardiola. He's learned how to manage. I think he would be a guy who could come in and sort of restore the fabric of what Arsenal is because he understands what Arsenal is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That
go ahead. Sorry.
In the time that it has taken Arsenal to win a Premier League game, I read an interesting stat at the beginning of the day. In the time that that Arsenal has not, in this last, since October, 9 total games unbeaten, I think it's like 6 in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Leicester City has won 5% of the total games that they've ever won in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Let that sink in for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Leicester City, in the time that it has taken Arsenal to win 2 Premier League games, has won 5% of the total games that they have won. Now, they're on a roll. They are top of the form table with Liverpool 15 points from 15 from their last. But, man, that tells you where Arsenal was.
Yeah. Agreed. Agreed. And I think, I know I said last week how Arsenal was the team that's gone the longest since the last time they've won a game. And meanwhile, Leicester has just been on fire. I mean, Jamie Vardy's averaging a goal a game in the Premier League. He's sitting on 16 right now, and he looks as good as ever. He looks like he's not going to stop scoring anytime soon. And Leicester looks like, you know, looks to be the new Aston Villa or Everton and sometimes Spurs was that team that was outside of the top four that seemed to be threatening. One of those three teams would threaten every year when there was a big four. And now that we have the big six, it seems like Leicester's that kind of like number 17. That being said, that's now disrespectful to say to Leicester, considering that they've been a top four squad. Actually, I would say a top three squad for the vast majority of this season so far. So you have to give Leicester their credit. But yeah, that does show you exactly where Arsenal was. And actually, I won't even say was. That shows you exactly where Arsenal is. Say what you want. Today is only one game, and it's only one win. And they were a bad call away from being from that game being a loss. Declan Rice also had a really, really good shot coming in. He happened to kick it straight at Orleno. Actually read his shot very well and got into position, because that would have put them down 2-0. And who's to say what would have happened once that occurred? So I agree with your commentary on Simeone for Arsenal. I think though, if the Arsenal fans had a thought that that was possible, Arsenal fans would ride with Ljungberg for the rest of the year. I think they would. They'd be okay with it. If they thought that was a possibility, even a good possibility, they would ride with that until the end of the season. I think they would. I know I would, because even with the win today, I do think that team is not capable in the current state with the current coaching to actually really compete really, really for a Europa League. I mean, I see them still finishing about seventh or eighth. And because a West Ham win, even if it was away, still doesn't strike me as something that you can really hang your hat on. So I would stick with Ljungberg if I knew we could get Simeone, but I don't think that this season is something that fans should really be getting up in arms about. In fact, if Arsenal can do what they did last year and focus on Europa League, that might not be such a bad idea this time around.
538, the sports information website, does their rankings. Right now, their projected table has Arsenal finishing in eighth with 52 points.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is interesting is that is plus two since the game ended, since the win.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to the West Ham match, they had given Arsenal a 4% chance of getting relegated, and they have that today. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, the fact that Arsenal's still, according to 538, and as much as I hate them, the fact of the matter is, they are occasionally right. They're still listing them with a percentage chance, albeit two, of being relegated.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's amazing to me that that could happen. But prior to this game, they had them finishing on 50 points, 9 points behind United in six.
Mm-hmm.
And a full 12 behind Tottenham, who they have finishing in fifth in the last official Europa League spot.
Mm-hmm.
I think It's interesting how people are forecasting season, and I'm right. You're right when, or I agree with you, that this is a team that's going to struggle to get into Europe. Now, the fact of the matter is, you struggle to get into Europe. You can't guarantee Simeone is going to come until next year. What does that do in January? What does that do for contracts? What does that do for stuff? Because you could be looking, and reports came out this week that Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang is not going to re-sign.
Yeah, he's not going
to
re-sign.
He wants to leave, and he wants to do so in the summer.
Yeah.
If you know that you have the likes of Simeone, can you persuade him to on?
I did
tip your hand if you're out if you're out. How does that affect what you're planning on doing?
Yeah, you know, if they're out, then
exactly. I know. If you're out, then you sell Aubameyang. If you're out, then you sell Aubameyang, I think, because you can get $100 million for Aubameyang, even at 30 years old, which I think he'll be by the end of the season. You can get $100 million for Aubameyang, and I think you do that. I think you sell him, and because say what you want, you have young talented players in the pipeline, and he's still 30 years old. So, yeah, he's been the best goal scorer that Arsenal's had since Thierry Henry in the short time he's been at Arsenal. But you have young players, and you're giving them playing time. And I can't say that if you brought in a coach like Simeone and he had the money to spend and he had the young talent right there ready to play – who's to say that they're not a couple of, you know, a couple of transfers away from being a top four contender again? So, and Lacazette's not playing very much right now. And without Aubameyang there, Lacazette's proven he can score goals. So I don't, while of course I would want Aubameyang to stay as long as humanly possible, I don't think it's such a doom and gloom if he chooses to leave, if that means you can bring in a coach who has deep pockets, with a team that's going to have some pockets, they're going to have some money to spend. Arsenal said that they weren't spending any money, and clearly that's not true because they have been spending the money. So I think in the immediacy, it would be pretty dire in the sense that they wouldn't be the typical Arsenal that finishes top four guaranteed that they did for 22 years. But I think the future would be bright because, like, say what you want. Arsenal is still a global team. They're a global brand, and they're recognized all over the world. Leicester isn't. Spurs are not. No matter how much their fans like to say they are not. So I don't think it's necessarily a negative thing if that was to happen. And I think if Simeone's there, you can convince players to come, because if he can get players to come to Atletico Madrid, he can get players to come to Arsenal, which have maybe they don't have as rich of a recent history, but they do have history, and they do have a global brand, and they do have a nice new stadium. I know it's one of the older of the newer stadiums, but it's still a new stadium, and it's still the second largest stadium in the Premier League. So there's still enough there where there may be a learning curve, and there may be some bumps in the road, but the long-term effects. Simeone's only 49 years old too. I think that's pretty promising. And I wouldn't be upset at the front office for making a move like that if they could. Because they could also convince Aubameyang to say, you know what? I can go to Arsenal, or I can go to Barcelona, because they're definitely, you know, sniffing around. But you're playing with a 33-year-old Messi. You're playing it looks like they're gonna be moving on from Luis Suarez. And Antoine Griezmann isn't as young as he used to be either. So there's no sense to think that if he does go to Barcelona at his age, that he would only be there as one of their top players for only a couple of years.
Uh, I got to figure out this, and we're going to end the Arsenal conversation after I get your response to this, and I'm going to tell you a story, and we're going to go. somebody need, and this is a conundrum that I have said since this happened. Somebody needs to sort out the Aubameyang Lacazette conundrum. How to fit them into the same team. And I said when Wenger, when Arsene Wenger got them both, that this was going to be a problem because you have two guys who play so similar that they will get in each other's way. And Wenger wasn't able to sort it out. Emery was not able to sort it out. Ljungberg was not able to sort it out. Do you believe that Simeone could possibly sort that out? Because
I do.
If you can sort that out and you can figure out a way to get Pepe, Lacazette, and Aubameyang to function together as an attacking unit, I think you have a legit chance. The problem is, while Pepe can play on the right wing where we saw him today,
where he seems really effective,
neither Lacazette nor Aubameyang can play on a wing. So you would have to play some sort of 4-4-2, which very few coaches are willing to do.
True.
And the problem would be that you have two guys who like to occupy the same exact space at the same exact time. And I believe it was Newton who said, that ain't possible.
My only counter to that would be this. Can you name two other players that would try to make that type of formation work more so than those two? They would try to make that work. And one of Simeone's preferred formations that he first practiced, 10 years ago was a 4-4-2 type of lineup. That could also be a 4-2-2-2 lineup.
I don't even need to go back 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm saying,
when he had Griezmann and Falcao, that was how he played. In fact, Simeone has played a 4-4-2 or some variant thereof more often than he has not.
Right.
And that was because he, when he had Griezmann, he used to play him off Falcao. That was how he played him.
Right. Now, Simeone, though, he can set – but okay, do you remember back – I know you remember this. So when Cristiano Ronaldo was playing for Manchester United, he played as a right winger, but he played as an advanced right winger where he didn't retreat back into the defense too much. He stayed up, and he scored 30 goals from that position. Not saying that Pepe would do that, but that's how Pepe could be used in a similar manner as a winger in a 4-4-2 lineup, where he tends to push up a little bit. And it's sort of known that maybe whatever side he happens to be playing on would be a more of an attacking side, something similar to the way Liverpool does with Mohamed Salah. So you have your three attacking players. Now, you then have the opportunity for two central midfielders, and one could be more of a holding midi, and one could be more of an attacking midi, and you have your left wing option, where that left winger actually will have some ability to roam around a little bit, considering that that's probably not going to be a preferred side for the attack, but that player could also be freer to come back and assist in any attack from the opposing team, as well as make runs down that left side. So that leads to this, but also wingbacks, which Arsenal has been known to have quality wingbacks. Don't forget, Ashley Cole cut his teeth as an Arsenal fullback, wingback, and then transitioned to more of a fullback. Now, Arsenal has a quality right back if he could just stay healthy. And I'm talking about Hella Bellerin, who can't seem to stay on the field. He got injured, of course,
before the game started today.
In warmups, he has not played effectively in over a year and a half. But when he is effective, he is consistently the fastest or one of the fastest players on the field and has shown he can cause a lot of problems on that wing. So, again, that takes us back to the root of Arsenal's problems, which is their central defense. But, again, that is where you could focus on the transfer market over the summer. And Bernd Leno is proven to be a quality goalie on the cusp of being a world-class goalie. Without Leno, Arsenal would be in 15th place. And I know other Arsenal fans agree with me in that sentiment. So, if Aubameyang was to say, and they were able to get Simeone with his preferred formation and his ability to coach players who like to play a similar role, and the fact that Lacazette and Aubameyang have shown that when they are playing together, they are quite unselfish, and they enjoy setting up the other, and they're learning how to play effectively together. Lacazette also hasn't been on the field because they're not reporting this. He's injured, and he's been injured for a long time. I think it's an ankle. So the possibilities are there. I'm not saying that that's what's exactly going to happen if that situation was to occur, but it is possible, and I think it would make sense to a lot of people, including the players. So I'm glad you brought that up because that is exciting. That could get somebody a little jumpy thinking about the future. So, again, though, the root of it, though, is still the same holes that Arsenal's having. Who are your center halves, and really, who's your coach?
So I'm going to end the Arsenal conversation on this.
Yeah.
My friend Sean from England sent me a text over the weekend. This was before the thing, before the win against West Ham.
Mm-hmm.
He said he went up to the game, his first game in London versus Brighton midweek.
Mm-hmm.
Wish I had not bothered. Atmosphere was terrible, and we officially now have the most expensive pub team in the world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that is the quote from the Liverpool fan. So as we get off of Arsenal fan radio, I would like to take a pause and give a shout out to Playing Guns, Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, D.C. and Virginia's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. It was the place to be this weekend. We had a great crowd out for the Manchester Derby. It is where we will be to watch the Army-Navy game and where I will be this weekend when Manchester United play whoever they play next on Sunday. Because I have ceased to pay attention to the schedule because it is meaningless to me at this point. All right. So, thank you very much, Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland. Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. Come down, say hi to the people. It is a great place to watch sports. Enough said. Changing tactics. Did you hear about Joaquin?
Joaquin?
Joaquin was not on our original run show, but Joaquin, who plays for Real Betis, scored a hat trick at 38 years old.
Oh, wow, really?
I am 39 and I have trouble getting out of bed. He is 38 and he scored a hat trick for Real Betis in 19 minutes against Atletico Bilbao. Again, I have trouble getting out of bed. He scored a hat trick in 19 minutes, thus becoming the oldest person in La Liga to ever score a hat trick, beating Real Madrid great Alberto Di Stefano. Big shouts out to the old guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good pull. Congratulations to you, Joaquin Sanchez Rodriguez, for holding it down for, well, you know, granted, I have trouble getting out of bed, but I'm on the other side of 40, so I think I'm allowed to have trouble getting out of bed. If he's 41 and scores a hat trick, then I'll start doing some push-ups.
In other related stupid news, there was a stabbing at the AC Milan game over a player of sweaty gym shorts. Two Milan fans had a dispute after the players came off and were throwing jerseys and other parts of their uniforms into the stands. There was a dispute over who caught a player's unnamed player shorts that resulted in one Milan fan stabbing another. I have never heard of fan-on-fan violence over a pair of shorts that had another man's balls in them a couple minutes before.
You know, this is something that would strike me as something that would happen with, like, maybe I could see Cagliari kind of doing that, possibly. You know what I mean? It seems like those guys get a little wild.
But perfectly AC Milan.
Yeah, but isn't Milan the city is like the it's like the Paris of Italy? Lots of fashion.
It is the Paris of Italy, but the AC Milan fans are dedicated and they will fight over guys' shorts.
Yeah, with ball sweat in them. Something that I would expect from. Yeah, I guess you think about it. With what AC Milan's been through, and considering their owner I believe he is still under investigation for corruption charges when he was prime minister and doesn't seem to be refuting those charges, sounds like that. I guess you can't be too surprised that this would occur with AC Milan fans. So let's see. They got to get Clarence Seedorf and Paolo Maldini back there to maybe regulate a little bit, find some shorts, try to ease the tension. Hopefully, though, if Milan actually start winning again and turn back into the club they should be, this type of behavior can stop.
In other AC Milan-related news, Gennaro Gattuso, and I'm not going to lie, Gattuso is one of my favorite players of all
time. Absolutely. Love the guy. Had a temper.
Which I love.
Yeah.
Which I love. I'm not going to lie about that. Love his temper.
Mm-hmm.
Love him. I have an AC Milan jersey, and the only thing that I would ever put on the back of it was Gattuso, because I love a guy who will run through a brick wall and fight the other guy on the player. And I was going to defend myself, and then I realized I actually do have a Suarez jersey.
Yeah, that's true.
Gennaro Gattuso is rumored to be taking over for Carlo Ancelotti at Napoli. So going back to, ever so briefly, our conversation on Arsenal, if Carlo Ancelotti's out at Napoli, which is rumored to be happening after this latest round of
if they get knocked out, yeah.
How quickly do you think that Arsenal would snap up Carlo Ancelotti?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Ancelotti's more of an Everton manager at this stage of the game. I think you'd get. I'll put it this way: if that does happen, I'm watching ArsenalFan.tv because that'll be funny.
That is some serious shade that you just threw.
Well, he's rumored for those positions too. He's rumored for the Everton job.
Carlo Ancelotti, who was one of the most victorious managers currently managing, instead said he's more of an Everton manager at this point. He's not up to standards at Arsenal. I'm going to just leave it at that.
Guy that's been bounced out of Napoli? I mean, I'm sorry. Napoli's having a good run and everything like that, but come on, man. They haven't won a league title since they had Maradona. So I'm probably wrong. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure that's how it is. And yeah, he's a very respected manager. But, you know, come on. He lasted, what, a year at Bayern Munich? Maybe?
Yeah.
And now he's getting bounced out of Napoli? I mean, maybe he needs to take a little bit of time off. Do a little bit of Jose Mourinho, get on TV a little bit, and then see if you can come back. But you see,
I'm not saying the game has passed him by or anything like that. I'm just saying I think at this point in time, I don't think he would fit in well with Arsenal. I just don't. And it seems like recently he hasn't been able to stay in any place for more than a couple of years. You saw his last really long-term coaching job was when he coached Milan, and that was over in 09. So, you know, it's a couple of years at Chelsea, a couple of years at PSG, a couple of years at Real Madrid. So it's just that doesn't breed a lot of confidence for a team that's really, really struggling right now. And I think he'd be given a longer leash if he'd go to a club like Everton, because it's not like Everton hasn't spent money. It's not like Everton doesn't have talent. They spent, what, £137 million or dollars this offseason? So, you know.
Over £137 million.
Pounds, yeah. So they're in there spending money. So, essentially, he would still be in a quality with a quality club that he could easily turn around and he can keep them up. And he could be lauded for it. And I think he could use some lauding right now, especially after what's happening in the last two clubs where he's been. So, you know, I don't know. I kind of pause on that. And I really want Simeone now.
Talk you into that one.
Yeah.
Corriere dello Sport in Italy on Friday posted a picture of Chris Smalling and Romelu Lukaku with the headline Black Friday.
You know, that's very Italy.
Dead silence. Yeah. And it is just, we were trying to do something and it did not work the way that we thought it was going to.
Exactly. You know, I looked at that, I saw it, and I said, you know, I get it. It's they're trying to be funny. They may be trying to be provocative, especially considering that Italy's had no lack of headlines when it comes to their treatment of black players in the media as well as on the pitch from their fans. So, you know, I liked Romelu Lukaku's response to that. It was basically, you know, come on, do better. And I thought that was perfect because, you know, the attempt at being – that attempt was so – I mean, I think after I saw the responses, I'm not going to lie. I chuckled at the idiocracy of it all. I chuckled. But in the end – you know, Lukaku had the best response. Just come on, y'all. Do better. Do better. You can do better than that. And it's just another thing that's going to continue to taint playing in Italy for black players. But, you know, again, a lot of these players are trying to earn a living. And if you have an opportunity to go play in Italy, which is probably the, what would you say, the second or third best league in the world right now?
Fourth.
I mean, fourth? Yeah, fourth. I'd say fourth.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you do? And, you know, I think Lukaku is the perfect ambassador for the response. I'll put it that way. I think he's the perfect ambassador for that.
I had a friend in college who once told me, everybody needs a friend to tell you, you can't do that.
Yeah.
They needed somebody to sit there and tell them, you can't do that.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
That would have solved that one.
Mm-hmm.
Both Inter Milan and Roma have banned them until after the new year because inside the fold they had an anti-racism thing. So they said they won't cooperate with them until after the new year, but then after that, not it. And after reading the whole thing, I'm like, yeah, it was. You just needed a friend to tell you that was.
Yeah.
That ain't right.
Yeah.
And
it
was
could have
solved,
been tongue in cheek, but the timing of it just couldn't have been worse.
Well, the timing and the headline could not have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, also over in Italy, Juventus lost 3-1 to Lazio this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Mauricio Sarri His streak continues. Juve, minus 7 points. This time last year, they had an 8-point lead. This year, they are in second place by 2 points. This year, they have dropped 9 points through 15 games.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, they had dropped two. So you are 7 points worse off than you were with Massimo Allegri. With Maurizio Sarri. Somebody needs to do something.
Yeah. You know, it's about time. It's about time. If it took Sarri ball to take Juventus down a peg, you know, there's also reports that Cristiano Ronaldo allegedly said he regrets leaving Real Madrid and he should have stayed in Spain because him and Sarri clearly aren't seeing eye to eye on quite a few things. But in the end, this is good for Italian football. It's good. It's good when a Milan squad is in the top three and playing well. And it's good for a squad to actually be challenging Juve. That's good. And you kind of wish, I think just for Sarri's sake, it would have been nice to have seen some real cracks in the Juventus armor when Allegri was still there. But that being said, it's good for Italian football. It's good. You know, you actually have a title race right now. Team games. You have, you know, 10 points separating first and sixth place. So there, and you know, Lazio's won their last five. And so you have another team. You have two teams in Rome that are both in Europe right now if the season were to end today. That's huge. That's huge. Rome is a great town, and it's a great footballing town. And to have those two clubs are going to be playing meaningful games against each other, because that rivalry is ridiculous. That's going to be fun. That's going to be fun. So, you know, yeah, maybe not as all right in the water at Juventus, but I think that means things are better in the rest of the water for the rest of the country. You're actually going to have a reason to watch Italian football this year, at least the Serie A. So ESPN Plus, you're about to get some more viewers, and that's going to definitely be from my house.
All right, so amongst other things, when we were talking about what they should rename stadiums and things during rivalries, mm-hmm. I had thought that if Juventus beats Inter or AC out for the championship, they should rename the San Siro the Michel Platini Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And if Inter or Milan beat out Juve, they should rename it the Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Well, okay, look. You know, something's going to be named the Zlatan Ibrahimovic at some point in the next 15 years. You have to agree with me there.
There is going to be a stadium in Sweden renamed.
In Sweden, yes.
The Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
But Zlatan will not be satisfied with only a stadium in Sweden being named the Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He would want a stadium in every country, at least one, to be named the Zlatan Ibrahimovic. He wants to change the name of the Landon Donovan MLS Award already to the Zlatan Ibrahimovic Most Valuable Player Award. You know that.
I'm not 100% sure they shouldn't. We're going to go a little bit south. Bayern Munich lost to Bayer Leverkusen
mm-hmm.
on the weekend 2-1.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somehow while we were sleeping, Bayern Munich ended up seventh in the Bundesliga.
Mm-hmm. And they're below an aspirin company of Bayer. I've never even heard of them before.
I have.
Yeah, and they also lost after, you know, Bayer took a red card, or Bayer, I'm sure that's probably how it's pronounced, took a red card with a good 15 minutes left in the game when you consider stoppage time, and were still able to hold on for the win.
Bayer took a red card in the 81st minute. Jonathan Tarr, good friend, he who was at fault for multiple goals against the Netherlands, took a red card. But Leon Bailey, the Jamaican, had the brace in the game to get both the goals for Bayer. Odd story. One of the reasons why I'm a big Bayern fan, is because I couldn't tell the difference in between Bayern and Bayer. Very dear friend of mine, who's a friend of my cousin's, Toby, was worked for Bayer Leverkusen.
Ah, this is Leverkusen.
Okay.
Ah, so my ignorance. I thought it was just Leverkusen. I didn't realize they are now going with Bayer now as their name.
No, they are
go by Leverkusen.
Leverkusen.
Yeah. And but usually when you saw the listings, they were listed as Leverkusen, not Bayer. I don't know. At least from my perspective, from what I saw, I was that's why I was confused. It was like Bayer. Who are they? But Bayer Leverkusen is known to give several American players a chance. So. I've always been a relative supporter of that team. I don't know how I missed that. Totally missed that. My brain fart of the day. I am going off of very little sleep, so.
I know. And so Toby worked for Bayer Leverkusen. And the only time that I've ever been to a game was when I was over in Germany. And it was Leverkusen-Bayern. And Toby got me tickets, and I couldn't tell the difference in between Bayern and Bayer. And I rooted for the wrong team. Now, it might have had something to do with that I was an American surrounded by a bunch of Germans, and I just wanted to get out of there alive.
Yeah.
So I started getting with whoever was winning, and I've been a Bayern fan ever since. But I could that N means a lot. But Bayern beat Bayern 2-1. And Bayern sit now seventh, behind Mönchengladbach, Leipzig, Dortmund, they're 7 points off the top.
Yeah.
On 20 points behind Schalke, Freiburg, and Bayer Leverkusen now.
Yeah, that's a little, I mean, it's odd. And I doubt this will hold serve for too much longer. You know, they still have Lewandowski, who's going to score another, 162 goals before the season's over. So, they do have a shorter schedule. So I believe they play 34 games. So they still have, they're beyond a third of the way through the season, getting close to half through the season. But I suspect that, two good weekends and they're back in fifth. And then, we'll see what happens with these other squads. I believe Leipzig will be out of Champions League pretty soon because I believe they're not going to be the Red Bull squad that's going to move on. It looks like we have the possibilities of an American coach to coach the other Red Bull squad to actually qualify for the knockout round in Champions League, which will be historic. But we'll see what happens. I mean, Freiburg, Schalke. Schalke's always been a good mid-table team in the Bundesliga. Same thing with Mönchengladbach. So let's. I don't want to hold my breath, but after what happened last year with Dortmund, it's really hard to count Bayern out. And you don't see the teams with the history that compete at this level like you do in Italy with this current Bundesliga. So I don't know. I losing three of the last five is difficult. I mean, taking six of the last possible 15 points is bad for Bayern Munich. But I mean, let's see what it looks like in March. Maybe we can revisit this. Now, if they're a seventh in March, nah, then we're having a much different conversation.
I'm gonna be honest with you. Liverpool have to travel to Leipzig tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of the earlier kickoffs. 1 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
Mm-hmm.
Liverpool need to avoid defeat. And they may well do that, but I think Leipzig has something for them.
Mm-hmm.
They've been scoring goals for fun, and mm-hmm. Liverpool hasn't exactly been keeping them out lately.
Mm-hmm.
It could get real, real, real freaking interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. Now,
I lied. Wrong Red Bulls team. That's Salzburg.
Yeah, yeah.
Leipzig are good.
Yeah, Leipzig are good. Salzburg has a shot to.
Salzburg has also been knocking them. So transpose everything I said. Just push it off on Salzburg because
yeah.
It's not my fault that Red Bull owns too doggone many teams.
Yeah, I was gonna say. There's no fault in making that mistake. No fault. I had to click back and forth between two separate Wikipedia pages as well as two separate Google searches to determine which team was which. And the only way I can tell is the logo for Leipzig as far as the size of the actual Red Bulls that are colliding is smaller than the Salzburg logo. That's the only way you can tell. That's the only way you can tell. So, at least from that respect, it is not our fault that that mistake was made. It's Red Bull's fault. Come on. Red Bull, I'm going to quote Romelu Lukaku, do better.
Look, if I'm Red Bull, I'm owning everything I can and branding it the same way.
I'll have Red Bull versus Red Bull in a final for all I care.
It may happen.
Yes.
I
believe that Red Bull Leipzig, though, I believe they play in Red Bull Stadium, whereas I think Salzburg play in Red Bull Stadium. That's not Red Bull Stadium because Red Bull Stadium is actually in New York because that's Red Bull Stadium.
Well, RB Leipzig is not actually Red Bull Leipzig because you can't have a corporate sponsor in your name. Bayer has been grandfathered in
mm-hmm.
because of the length of time, but it's actually, I think if I get this right in German, it's Rosenborg something weird to get it to Leipzig.
Right.
And my German is not that good. That's why That's why I'm not trying to do that.
Understood.
But
yeah.
I actually think RB Salzburg has something to give Liverpool.
I agree. Plus, Liverpool doesn't have to win.
No. And my experience with them in the Wednesday games before Thanksgiving was that they don't, and when they don't, they won't.
They won't, yeah.
And Jurgen Klopp has already said this may be the biggest game that they've had in years. I don't think so, but hey, I'll be paying attention tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a Jurgen statement, though.
Jurgen
has readily admitted how much fun he has at press conferences because he can just say whatever in the world he wants.
So, amongst other Champions League news, Messi will be rested against Inter Milan
mm-hmm.
in advance of El Clasico. Now, when I read this, I thought El Clasico was coming up this weekend. No, it's not.
No, it's next weekend, right?
It's next weekend.
Yeah.
Now, Barca and Real are tied going into Clasico.
Mm-hmm.
But it's next weekend. Barca still has to play Sociedad, and Real still has to play Valencia. And I'm getting ready for this week. The rest of them in midweek. That makes sense. Nah. Y'all play a week from tomorrow. Or Wednesday. Y'all play a week from Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. They play on the 18th, I believe.
Yeah,
it's the 18th.
Y'all really worried about rest now? Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a little odd. I mean, it could just be that. Is this an away game?
It is.
It may be he has to go out to dinner with his wife. You know, she's like, hey, why do you got to keep playing all the time? You know, what's the point? You guys are already through. Why don't you just kind of stay home for a day or two? You know, come on. You can stay home. I mean, they're sitting 4 points clear of Milan. If Milan wins the game or Dortmund wins the game, doesn't really matter, at least as far as Barcelona is concerned. Now, if I played for Dortmund, I'd be a little upset. That's all I'm saying. I'd be a little upset if I was playing for Dortmund. Inter Milan's got to be relatively excited. Of course, they might just get Ansu Fati some playing time, and he can go in there and score two goals, as we've seen him do. So
Ansu Fati signed a new contract.
He did. He signed a contract to, I believe, 2025. So he's going to be there for a while.
With a 400 million euro buyout.
Yep. So
for a 16-year-old.
For a 16-year-old. They're seeing something in this kid. And they have already basically tagged him as the heir apparent. And they figure by the time he's 23... But think about it. How old was Messi when he was getting into games during Champions League? He was 16. So
a little bit older.
I believe he was already playing. Maybe not regularly, but he was getting in games. I believe as young as 16, but I could be mistaken on that.
Games. He really started to play regularly when he was like 19.
Yeah. I mean, they're Ansu Fati is getting a lot of burn, and he's on the bench quite often. So this guy's special. I mean, this kid's. I hope he doesn't burn out. You know, talking about getting all this burn. Hopefully, he doesn't burn out at being so young. But this kid's special.
Speaking of burn, you catch how many songs go?
I did. Whoa! Now you have to give credit where credit is due. Credit is due. Son is not known for his speed. But
accelerate through the entire defense.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And was very the way he kept the ball just close enough that he could hit it, that he could really accelerate and keep, you know, real solid control over a team that is relatively known to be able to play some pretty good D in Burnley. I was thoroughly impressed. He's winning over more and more and more fans on a daily basis. And the way he reacted to injuring, I believe he was an Everton player. I could be mistaken. And at his next goal, he's still apologizing. Say again.
It was Gomez.
Gomez, yes. And he was very, very, very contrite and very, very upset about that incident. And so you're seeing how his personality is starting to come out a bit more. You don't often see players of East Asian descent being highlighted the way he is in the world media. Three-time defending Asian player of the year. Looking to be even better than Park Ji-sung, which I didn't think was possible. I'm a huge fan of Park Ji-sung, even though he did play for Manchester United. I mean, that guy was a phenomenal player.
Park, wherever you may be. I'm not going to sing the rest of the song.
That's okay. I even know that song. Amazing player. But I am really, 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 really happy for him, even though he does play for Spurs. But he is on the cusp of being considered world class now. And the way he picks up the
cusp.
Yeah. But the way he's been picking up the slack for Spurs when their quote unquote big stars, mainly speaking of Dele Alli and Eriksen and Harry Kane, have not necessarily been, you know, they've been injured or they've been playing out of position or they just haven't really been. He's been so consistent. So consistent. And, you know, we've had a steady stream of Korean players in Europe since about 2000. And especially after, of course, the 2002 World Cup with Korea having a really good showing. And but you're seeing it's not uncommon now to hear of a Korean player on any sort of team in the Premier League right now. So but applaud him. I mean, what a goal. What a goal. I mean, it's too bad that Luis Suarez had that excellent back heel that he did over the weekend, because that I think that possibly overshadowed it a bit, mainly because it's Luis Suarez. But yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. That was a phenomenal goal.
If that isn't a Puskas nominee for best goal of the season, I don't know what is.
I don't know what is.
Anytime you run through an entire team to get that.
Mm-hmm. That would be a Puskas nominee if it was from Ronaldo or Messi or
I think it will be.
Yeah, it needs to be. You could even see maybe if that was what's the Croatian dude? One of him could have been that guy's goal. You know, if it was an established European star, then yeah, even Mo Salah, if it was a Mo Salah goal, yeah, that would be up there. Maybe even a Sadio Mane, but yeah, but
I think it'll get there.
It needs to get there. It really does. And I hope the push is there. I'll tell you this, man. Fans from East Asia, they show out in force. How else do you think Yao Ming got all those All-Star games when he could barely walk? Later in his career. And he was still starting for the All-Star team. So.
All right. So, just because we're up against it, Man United beat Man City this weekend. I gave you plenty of time to talk about Arsenal. So this is my Man United rant. Versus the top seven, they've collected 14 points. 1-1 draw to Liverpool, 1-0 win against Leicester City, 2-1 against Manchester City, 4-0 against Chelsea, 1-1 against Wolves, and 2-1 against Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Mind you, freaking awesome week.
Mm-hmm.
Beat Spurs and beat City on the road.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
From 8 to 20, they've collected 10 points. The only two wins they have are 3-1 against Brighton and Hove and 3-1 against Norwich.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next three games come up against Watford, Everton, and Burnley. That should be 9 points if ever I saw them making, but
yeah.
Who knows? They actually have a relatively friendly run of fixtures up until New Year's Day against Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already telling you now we won't watch that because I'll be up in New Jersey and it's at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But Watford, Everton, Burnley, Colchester in the League Cup.
Mm-hmm.
Ole should win those, but I don't know. I'm going to leave well enough alone.
Well, you got to think of it, though. The only game they've lost since recently was the Bournemouth game, but that was on November 2nd. I haven't lost since then. You know.
Yeah, but you also drew against.
Yeah, but that was against a very spirited Chelsea squad. Yeah, you lost the Europa League match, but it wasn't a pivotal match.
You lost against you drew with Sheffield United and you drew with Aston Villa.
True, but you didn't lose. You didn't lose. And you can't say that Sheffield hasn't been a very difficult place to play this season. That's not a place players want to go. You don't want to go to Sheffield. And the fact that they were able to almost win that game, but then you're seeing an improvement in the squad over the past few weeks. And especially with the draw with after the draw with Everton, but beating Spurs, beating City, and it wasn't like the City game was really like super one-sided. You know, yeah, City dominated possession, but you can't say Man United just got lucky. I'll put it that way.
They actually had a chance to be a lot further ahead than they were at the final score.
Mm-hmm.
I was just happy that they won.
Yeah.
So we've got, man, we're up against it. I don't know where this hour and a half went.
I don't either, man. I didn't even get the stuff I wanted to talk about.
You don't get stuff that you want to talk about. It's my show. When you get to control to run a show, we will talk about what you want to talk about. That being said,
absolutely.
If there's something you really want to talk about, let me know.
Absolutely not. I'm so glad you got this show running, man. Boy, I'm sitting here. I'm juggling a lot right now, man. So I saw the running show. I was like, great. That sounds great. I know what I got to look up.
It is the penultimate show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe the 2019 went that quickly.
That quickly.
We've had fun.
We're a year and a half into this show, brother. You believe that?
And still ain't nobody listening.
No.
We're a year and a half into the show. We still suck.
Yep. You ain't taking us away, though. Pirate Radio.
We still going to do what we do.
Absolutely.
As we go out, your parting thoughts.
I'm looking forward to the final show of 2019. So my parting shots for this particular day are, let's see, I think I'm going to go with, let's see. All right. I'm going to make a bold prediction. Who is the worst team in the Premier League? We have Watford. They're playing against the best team in the Premier League, Liverpool at Anfield. 0-0 draw. Call it. That's my parting shot for today.
We got Champions League. We got Europa League. We never touched on the fact that Celtic beat Rangers for the Scottish Cup, despite only having one shot on target and going down to 10 men. Full credit to Celtic, great win. It is the epitome of the old man saying to the young upstart, yeah, not so fast, son. We still got it.
We still got this.
And
hey,
I gotta get Celtic Cam back to talk about them as they go in and keep on this quest to get the yet another Scottish Premier League, go for the quadruple in Scotland as they keep this boat rolling.
Mm-hmm. 29th, got another Old Firm game, 7:30. I might get up for that one.
Okay. I got to give a shout out to Flames and Sharpie Fiddle for keeping us on the air. 4844 Cordell Avenue, Bethesda, Maryland, Maryland's premier venue for live sports and entertainment. A big shout out to producer Paul for continuing to host this show, even though he probably has better things to do. word of the day, arcane, obscure or mysterious. As in this show probably needs to be arcane, but it is not. That being said, I am Mike. He is Stead. This has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. We tried. We failed. We'll do better next week.
Peace out.
Peace.